All right, welcome to another edition of Highlander Newsroom, hosted by the Highlander Newspaper. I'm Miles Andrew Zuve, editor-in-chief of UC Riverside's Highlander Newspaper. We're here at KCR Riverside, and alongside me at the table today, we have
John Hammond, lead sports editor.
Evan Ismail, assistant news editor.
Adrian Garcia, assistant radar editor.
And Jasper Goh, assistant photo editor.
Whoa, first time for Jasper.
First time for Jasper.
Come by. Three for Adrian. This is big. So we have five people at the table today, and it's pretty fitting given that there is a very pressing issue at the forefront of the discussion surrounding the University of California today, and that is a state audit which revealed that essentially the UC, the office, was hiding funds in their reports, right? And $175 million in reserves was revealed to have been basically held away. And this was in the midst of, obviously, the tuition hikes and countless other things in regards to their budget in terms of raising funds. And this has obviously created a lot of controversy. So there's a lot of things we can talk about with this. I'm sure you guys have read up on it. You're familiar with the subject. But talk about from a student perspective, right? Where does this initially kind of leave you in regards to your perspective of the UC and the UC office, and particularly the office of the president, Jan Napolitano? We can start with any one of you.
I mean, it kind of makes me feel like the UC is being run by like Tom and Jerry-esque criminals, where they've got all these portraits of previous UC presidents, and behind them are these like safes that they're just hiding gold in or something. Like, why are they? What is the point of hoarding all of this money with this president budget that's just so massive, and it's just getting more and more massive, and they're doing nothing with it, on top of paying, as the article put, generous salaries and atypical benefits. I don't understand what good could come of this. They're padding the executive's pockets, and they're basically Robin Hooding us, anti-Robin Hooding us, actually. I don't know, it just doesn't make me feel taken care of or even any kind of comfortable at the UC, knowing that my tuition is trying to be raised so these guys can just store money for no reason.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I think that it's a little strange, you know, they're reimbursing Regents for theater tickets. It's like, what are you doing going to theater when you're supposed to be on a business meeting? You know, and it's like another thing where, you know, people in the university, I believe it's University of California Office of the President, makes $2.5 million more or something like that. Or administrative salary, excuse me, makes $2.5 million more than the maximum annual salary ranges for comparable state employees. And I think that that's insane because, you know, we just got done raising the tuition to $250 per student in UC. And, you know, it's like you're not when you go into public works, you're not supposed to be profiting off of it. And that's exactly what these people are doing. They're literally taking one of the richest educational institutions and they're just profiting on it. And I think that that's really disgusting because you can't rob the students to where it basically becomes completely unaffordable and you're going to be in a lifetime of debt to go and get an education when they're up there sitting in their mansions just collecting more money so they can go to theater. Like, it's insane.
So with this, is this like a case of corrupt politicians again, like the White House? Is that what it is?
I don't know about politicians. It seems more like
they're just bloated bureaucrats. That's all they are.
Yeah, sure. It's the administration. I don't know about politicians.
I guess coming from a student perspective, going back to that, what really bothers me is the University of California and the Regents and all the higher ups strive and talk about all these great things about the UC system and talk about, you know, how the UC system is made up of 40% of low-income families, et cetera, et cetera. Yet they're doing things like not reporting accurate numbers on their audits or trying to hide things and then coming around and saying, hey, no, actually, these are real. These are legitimate. But again, as my colleagues previously stated, they're just robbing students of their money.
Yeah, and it's like it just kind of seems like you're using public education to profit, which, I mean, I get it in, you know, corporate America, everything has to be profitable, but it's still public school. You're not supposed to be rolling in cash for public school. And what absolutely boggles my mind is how they've got all this money that, like, that said in the audit was supposed to be used for the students and spent on the students and hasn't been. And, you know, we've been talking about how, I mean, we've probably talked ad nauseum of all the lecture halls on campus or not having enough space for classes or not having enough professors. And if only we, and then we get, oh, well, we can't pay for that. We can't pay for them. Yet we have this, like, mountain of gold being guarded by these, like, Lord of the Rings-esque dragons in the UC office and just hanging onto it because it looks cool. Like, why?
Oh, why? I was kind of open-ended. I thought you were going to say why something. Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, you guys all hit it. From the student perspective, it's definitely concerning, but it's also not all that surprising, unfortunately. The UC Regents have historically, and they've gotten better, but the UC Regents have historically just kind of operated as they saw fit. And it's I've always felt that, personally, the student view that, or at least the majority student view, the student view who, of the students who are actually involved and actively care about what's going on campus and beyond, they've all kind of said the UC Regents are not there for the students. They're all about self-interest and things of that nature. And it was came to light when they were protesting against tuition hikes. And this, I think, better, compounds that sentiment in that way, right? It's concerning, it's troubling, and it's going to be interesting, I think, going forward, what the initiative is in terms of changing or reforming anything in regards to the UC. Interestingly enough, the audit that we're speaking about, one of the closing statements, or I think the closing statement, was significant reforms are necessary to strengthen the public's trust in the office of the president. Now, what those reforms can be is another question up for debate, because some people have speculated that a reform in terms of more state control over the UC is something that can be looming, and that has its obvious pros and cons. But what are your thoughts on where we can see the UC go from here in terms of changes, reforms that need to be made, and particularly the potential that the state government can have complete or more control over the University of California going forward?
I mean, of course, I've said on here before that I'm not for the government having more control in, you know, in, I mean, it's a little bit more indirect in this case, but I think that when it comes to basically people just being paid just bars of gold to run a public school system, I think that's just so wrong. And I don't know if it's, I don't really think that there's an easy solution to this, and I don't really think it's going to be solved by annexing control from Jerry Brown, because Jerry Brown, obviously, he does nothing anyway. I mean, he's literally has not helped the University of California at all. And, you know, I don't really think it would be any better for the federal government to take it over. So it's there's really no easy solution for it. And I mean, obviously, it's easy to say that, oh, well, you can just cut the salaries. Like, that's so easy to say. But, like, let's be real. They're not going to cut their salaries. So I think that, I mean, there's no easy solution to this. I don't really think that giving either state or federal government any more control, especially since we've seen inaction on both parts. So, I mean, there really is no easy answer. I don't really know how you would solve something like that.
Right, because, like, the first thing you think is, like, oh, I want more transparency from this. But where does that come from? Because, like you said, you don't want to necessarily fork all the power over to, like, you know, the federal government or the state government, because, like, then obviously they've done nothing about it so far. What more are they going to do about it? I mean, you would think you'd be able to trust the administrators to not do this, but obviously you can't. So I don't know. I mean, maybe you could increase the frequency of audits in an effort to make it harder for them to hide that. But then at that point, I don't know, like, at that point, is that now you're just, like, peering down their backs, and they're just, you know, they're going to obviously have all of their stuff in check because they know the audits are coming once a month, and then the other 30 days of the month they're hiding money. I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where you know you want a solution, but like Evan said, it's not very clear as to what that solution would be.
Yeah, that's the thing. And what they need is someone or something to regulate them, right? But you don't want someone to oversee and control them in regards to the state. So it's really difficult. you just have to kind of hope that you can, you know, put your trust in the hands of these people who are the regents, who are supposed to represent the students in this case. And even putting it in the state government's hands is not a surefire way to ensure that they'll be truthful, and in this case, truthful, right? I mean, if you recall the 2012 incident in which the, I believe it was Jerry Brown's state park, the person in charge of state parks was, he had to resign because it was revealed that they hid the existence, the state parks hid the existence of about $54 million in reserves. Completely similar instance, right? These are types of things that people in positions of power just have seemingly tend to do. It happens in the case of even the lower levels of government, down to student governments, and so it's something that I think for most students it's not a surprise, but it at least hopefully does change something in regards to the tuition hikes, right? For which I know most students at least are against, and perhaps people kind of rethink, okay, well, where can these funds go toward? But yeah, it's no easy answer, because if you're calling for state government control, you're also calling for less independence of the UC itself, and where do you kind of lie on that end? So it's not an easy question to answer. It also reminds me of the debate over the VCSA here on campus, the Vice Chancellor's Office overseeing ASUCR, right? Which now they do have oversight, but some people were iffy on it because they felt like ASUCR needed to be regulated, but also they didn't want the control of the UCR administration to be further enhanced, right, in terms of how close they are to controlling the day-to-day of the student body. We haven't seen how that plays out down the line, but it's still kind of something that's reminiscent of that at a very local level in our case. So, yeah. Anything? No? No one wants to add anything?
I mean, it's just, I don't know, like kind of like the VCA thing. It's kind of like having the bad guys being overseen by worse guys, right? And you're just like, I don't feel any better about this. This is not okay.
I don't know. I mean, I get that ASUCR wants to be independent, and I think that's that's great, like they should be independent, but there's something that bothers me about students overseeing hundreds of thousands of dollars of student fees. That kind of makes me a little bit nervous. And I mean, there's good people in ASUCR, don't get me wrong, this isn't in any way bashing ASUCR, but I'm just saying is that it's not always a bad thing to have oversight. I mean, of course, that there's definitely a fine line between oversight and complete control. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having somebody make you more transparent, but there is something wrong with having somebody just coming in and completely taking over. So, and I think there is a fine line between that you have to draw. So I think that it really just starts with making sure that they're more transparent. How you do that, it's complicated for sure, but it's definitely not a bad thing. If you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, like there's a balance to be had, but when it gets more complicated, the higher you go in terms of levels of leadership, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
That's the thing. Like student government, yeah, like ASUCR, I think, was the only independent student government in the UC for a reason, right? All the other UCs in the administration saw reason to oversee or at least take complete control of student government. I personally stand on the, kind of middle end. I think there should be some
same
kind of regulation, but, there should also be the freedom for ASUCR and other student governments as such to operate. There are checks and balances within the student government itself to kind of help them regulate things properly if they are practiced and followed correctly.
I completely agree.
That would get applied to the administration office too, right?
You would think, right?
Right.
If you can trust children, or young adults with this kind of money, we should be able to trust actual adults with even more money. Yeah, but
it's kind of weird, right? You think it'd be the other way around, but nope. Just keeps getting weirder.
Just keeps on getting weirder.
Life right now.
Yeah, well, keeping on the subject of money, our editorial in this week's issue 25, it focuses on this Excelsior, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, I think it's Excelsior.
Yeah, Excelsior scholarship that New York State unveiled recently. It basically is a scholarship that essentially covers the tuition for students enrolled in the State University of New York system. We were, at least our board at the time, is somewhat firmly opposed to the potential of such a scholarship being implemented into the UC system. That's kind of the angle that we took with it, particularly because we felt that it has too many caveats basically to apply to enough students. Essentially, it applies to a limited amount of students and so forth, right? So what are your guys' thoughts? I don't know, some of you were on the board for this one in particular. What were you guys' thoughts on this Excelsior scholarship, particularly it potentially hypothetically being applied to the University of California?
Well, initially it seems like a good idea with like poor execution, but I mean I can kind of understand, because you know, you're kind of, it's sort of like a sneak peek, I'd like to think, of a bigger plan where they implement it on a smaller scale. It works, it gets more funding, and then it goes to a bigger scale. Because I believe when we were researching it, it said only 32,000 students were able to take advantage of this. Like, that's UCR and, like, half of UCLA, right? Like, in New York is probably closely, if not more, populated than California. So, obviously, like, that's not helping a lot of people. Also, the issue of that it comes from, like, taxpayers, and California's already severely in debt. Which is why, like, on the editorial board, we thought this probably wouldn't happen in California, just because of that reason. Especially since California has not been doing us any favors in terms of spending money or putting money into education. But I think if, like, the kinks got ironed out, this would be awesome, because one of the things I really liked about it is that it did offer help. It did offer, like, a de facto scholarship opportunity to middle-class families, like the $100,000 to $125,000, like, earning for families. That's a pretty underserved, I guess you could say, group of people for scholarships, because I think, you know, the idea is like, oh, well, if you're middle class, you can afford to go to college, but not anymore, especially not in California, right? Like, you know, especially the UC system is pretty expensive. So it's kind of nice to see that, like, if it had that same language in California, to be able to help, you know, middle class families.
Mm-hmm. I definitely would have to agree with John in the beginning. You definitely see how it seems like a great idea, and actually when I first read the title, I'm like, oh, free money, basically, who wouldn't want that, right? But reading a little bit more in depth and getting past the title of the news article that we were reading, I realized that there actually is quite a number of problems to it, especially a few that John had already mentioned, one of them being it can only be applied to 32,000 about or so college students. And in California, again, there are way more, I mean, well, in terms of the University of California system, there are significantly more students who will definitely need that aid. And this also brings up the point of that kind of gray area where, okay, so this would only benefit, yes, the middle class, but how about those who kind of get stuck in that bottom, who are maybe not wealthy enough yet to get this, or maybe they do receive some financial aid, but not enough to cover their tuition and things like that. Or, for example, in New York, this doesn't cover their board. And we know that room and board in New York is not inexpensive at all. So taking that into consideration as well. So yes, it looks really nice and glittery and all gold on the outside, but really kind of looking past it makes me, you know, bring up a couple of questions. One thing I do agree with this scholarship is that you're required to work, I believe, 2 years after you graduate. So I think that's actually a really good incentive to kind of help the economy, right, whatever state you're in. But personally for California, I don't think that this is something that I can see happening at least anytime soon.
So I have a question. Does it only benefit the middle class because the middle class go to better schools? Is that?
No, you have to already be in like their grant system. So basically you have to fill out FAFSA.
So
right?
The scholarship is for middle class people.
Not exclusively.
It's like for a certain bracket,
right,
of your income.
Oh,
so if you're
okay,
too wealthy, then obviously you can afford an education. But
right,
if you don't have enough money, then you should be getting financial aid, ideally.
So if you're caught in the middle, then you get the scholarship.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot more sense. I don't know. That seems, I guess I can kind of understand where it's coming from. I mean, it seems like, I mean, because we ran into the same problem, is that in my family, I mean, because it sucks. It doesn't really work out in your favor if you are in the middle class, especially in California, because, you know, you get a bunch of money if you're poor, but you don't get anything if you're rich. But when you're middle class, you're stuck in the middle. So I think this is a nice supplement, because I think that, you know, there obviously students work very hard to get to college, and I think that just because your family doesn't have enough money, I think that's not very fair, especially since the middle class are caught in the middle. If you're
literally,
literally, no pun intended, but
I mean, like Jasper said, though, I definitely think it's smart to add in that you have to work in, like, obviously as it is, you have to work in New York for 2 years. So obviously, it was in California, you have to work in California for 2 years. I like that because since it is going to be funded by taxpayer money, you're pretty much setting up the way in which this gets repaid, because you put these students back into the economy for 2 years at least, so the money they're making, the taxes they're paying, goes back into the system to kind of perpetuate it, which solves the age-old problem of college graduates working at Starbucks because you can't get it, you know.
I think it's great to say that oh, well, you have to work in your state for 2 years and then it's all forgiven. Like, that's great, but if you can't find a job, then, I mean,
it's not all forgiven. It's you have to do that in order to, like, keep the money, and for, like, I think for, like, the interest rate to stay at the way it is. Like, it's not like 2 years completely, like, forgives it. It's 2 years in order for you to, like, fulfill your end of the bargain.
Oh, so it's kind of like that, the program here, and that if you work in public service, then some of your loans get forgiven. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that
and
makes
if you
sense.
Don't keep that promise, if you don't stay the 2 years to work after, I believe it comes back
it
to
turns
you
into
as
a
loan. Yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
it
okay.
becomes like an actual loan as opposed to a scholarship.
That's interesting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. So, like, if you don't fulfill your end of the bargain, it goes from being a scholarship to a loan.
Hmm. Well, I guess that makes sense. I mean,
right.
I mean, it's, I guess, if you're using taxpayer dollars to fund your education, then, I mean, there should be some obligation on your part,
right,
to some degree.
And they kind of incentivize your obligation, right? Like, hey, you're obligated to work for it, but you got to work in the state already, right, that you're going to school in. And like I said, obviously we have a lot of college grads aren't able to get jobs out of school, you know, 6 to 8 months later, they're not getting jobs. And your loans are due 6 months after you graduate, right? And which at the time seems like a good idea, but if you can't get a job for 8 months after you graduate, what do you do for those other 2 months?
Yeah, I think, yeah, that there's a lot of caveats that come with this, clearly. And I think, you know, if you were to have this implemented elsewhere, a student taking it would have to understand such caveats before, you know, doing so. It's another one that I don't think we mentioned is the fact that you have to complete, well, you don't have to complete in 4 years, but it only lasts for 4 years, I think is the case, right?
Yeah,
yeah, you have to graduate on time.
You have to graduate in time. Otherwise, I think it goes back to being a loan.
Is that what happens? Okay, because
yeah.
I know for one in particular, the tuition waiver for California, at least for California public schools, Cal State and UC, it only lasts for 4 years, but it's not like you have to pay it back if you stay for five. It's just on the fifth year, the sixth year, seventh, eighth, whatever. you know, I'm trying to relate to you here, John. You
right.
know what I mean? No. kidding. But no, afterward, it's just you're kind of on your own to pay. But it's not like you have to end up paying that back or anything like that. It just lasts for 4 years. But for this one, you're saying it's 4 years or else, essentially.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Kind of like the Cinderella.
Requirement
and then, and then 2 years of work or else, right?
Yeah.
So it's a lot of caveats. I don't think I would say necessarily that, oh, we should not have it in California, because it's not like having such a thing exist in California, at least from my understanding. It's not like it would eliminate all other scholarship opportunities and this is the only one, right? I mean, it is an opportunity if it's someone who is right on track to right on track to graduate in 4 years, as well as on track to have a job in 2 years, right? And you understand these things and you kind of know what's going forward for you, then, you know, this is something that's ideal for that situation. Obviously, it only covers tuition, doesn't cover room and board, as was raised, but that's a big chunk. And so I don't personally have a problem with it being potentially implemented elsewhere in the UC. It's just you have to take it on with the understanding of, okay, well, here's what I have to do in order for it to actually be effective for me. And I can see also why they would implement such caveats as well, because, I mean, it is called the Excelsior Scholarship, which I assume is tied to the root word excel, and perhaps at least they're posed as, hey, we just want our students to do well and take this money, and also knowingly try to work toward receiving a job or work toward graduating 4 years. But it doesn't work for everybody, right? Some people have other expenses. Some people have families, right, that they have to take care of, or other people have to take care of, and they can't, you know, take on a full-time schedule quarter after quarter, semester after semester. But, yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I am on it. But I think it's definitely a step toward potentially creating a scholarship that is more caveat-free and still kind of effectively does similar things and is more easy to attain. But there's so many scholarships out there, man. It's definitely growing in terms of scholarship opportunities, but we need more like this, I think, that are more available to students. Yeah. Anyone else? Is anyone here on a scholarship like that significantly covers tuition?
There's a grant.
So, just financial aid.
Financial aid, yeah. I think definitely like the UCR grant basically carried me through my first 3 years, and then this last year it was cut significantly. I don't know why, but I've only taken out actually one loan in my senior year, which I feel pretty lucky.
Mm-hmm. And you're in your senior year.
Yeah, I'm a senior. Yeah. But my family, I would say we're in like the lower part of the middle class, so yeah. We just kind of probably hit that bracket.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. Yeah. I'm actually using that veteran fee waiver, which is why I know about it. But other than that, yeah, it's all good. So, okay, we have about 4 minutes left here. Let's talk about kind of things that went on this week. There are some significant events. ASBB had the Arts Walk. Middle Eastern Week took place. Am I missing something else? Let's see. Food Truck Festival happened.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. A lot of stuff happened, and we can, I guess, kind of go around and share, because I know each of you had individual experiences with that. Evan, you want to kind of talk about Middle Eastern Week and that was?
Yeah, ME Week was so much fun. I mean, unfortunately, I couldn't make all of the events, but it was really nice to have other writers there that covered them really well. We had all of the writers that we had for ME Week were really good. They did good stuff. It was really interesting because I think that it's really important to have stuff like that because it shows the world and people that may not know any better about the Middle East and about Arab culture that, there is something else other than what we see on television, which is usually war and politics. And, it's really important for people to see, we can have fun. You know, we cook good food. We're still a lively culture, even mm-hmm. though, what we see on television may kind of contradict that. And, it's really important because people don't get the fact. They don't look beyond the headlines. So, you turn on NBC News and you see, there was a suicide bombing in Afghanistan, or, there's something with the rebels in Syria. There's, that's something that people, that just kind of resonates, and people don't really understand, or they forget the fact that, there's so much more to the Middle East than what we see. You know?
And it was put on by the Middle Eastern Student Center, is that?
Yeah, the Middle Eastern Student Center.
I believe. Yeah. And so, it seemed like a great event. A lot of people showed out, interactive events for people to get immersed in such culture and not, try to at least combat those messages that are internalized, as you said, through the media. Right. Adrian, were you at ASPB's Arts Walk?
Yes,
I wasn't able to catch it.
Yeah, I covered it.
I've never even seen an Arts Walk by ASPB before. Is this really the first year they've had it?
No, I think they had it like the past 2 years before.
Okay, yeah, I get confused because I know they have like Chalk Walk, they have other Arts Walks around. But anyway, how was that for you?
Arts Walk was like super chill. I got at the Arts Walk, I got like badges and plants, and of course there was like artworks and like photography of like the students, and there was a graffiti artist by the name of Scepterhead, and he painted what seemed to be like a super psychedelic version of Scotty, but at the end I realized it was actually a sloth.
Oh my gosh.
It's because he had the UCR cap, and I thought it was Scotty.
I see.
But
Scotty the sloth.
But overall, was it a one day event?
Yeah, it was just one day event during the evening, and honestly I had like a pretty pleasant experience there. So
that's nice, man. Yeah,
I would go again.
And Jasper, you said that the food truck festival was fun, right? I wasn't able to get it. The food was quite expensive, so I didn't take time to check it out.
Yeah, so lately, whenever the food truck festivals happen, I haven't really been buying much of the food because I realize it's kind of overpriced and I'm never really full from it. So I just kind of like to observe, sometimes go take photos. And I think it was a great event that's hosted by ASPB. No, yes.
ASUCR.
Sorry. I think it's a great event hosted by ASUCR. Sorry. But yeah, I think it's a really awesome time simply because I feel more students come out on that day than any other day during the school week. And it's a great way to get the students together and people even kind of like the change of atmosphere, the change of environment, right? Sometimes we get a little tired of the hub food, which is understandable. So it's nice to have, you know, crepes and lemonades and sushi rolls.
They had fancy grilled cheeses.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was so great.
Did you get anything, Jasper?
I personally did not, simply because I'm just trying to save money.
I feel that, Jasper.
Yeah.
I do.
Going to eat my homemade hummus.
Yeah. Oh, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. And John, did anything with your week that was spectacular before we close out?
I mean, not for me personally, but last I checked, women's golf is 12 shots back for the lead in the Big West Conference Championship. Today is, I believe, the third day of of competition. I think it ends today. Or that might have been yesterday. But yeah, so hopefully they're showing out.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
We're hosting it. I mean, basically a home game.
Yeah, and they did well last year. Well, that's an understatement, right?
So, yeah, one.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully they repeat this time. For me, nothing spectacular. I went to Coachella. That was nice. That was fun.
Dude.
Casual.
No. I mean,
Only Coachella. Oh,
you got to see Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, Kendrick Lamar radio hit. It was nice. It was nice. But glad to be back and glad to be here at the newsroom table with all you and all you guys listening. Again, this has been hosted by Highlander Newsroom and, the Highlander Newspaper and KUCR 88.3 Riverside. Thank you to Louis Vandenberg, Monica Taylor, Elliot Fawn, Tina Bold, Eddie Valencia, and to all you for tuning in and all you at the table. We'll be with you next week. Bye.